Hi, this is Colin McCallan. Thank you for listening. Please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you.
Welcome to Is This Legal? Here are your hosts, attorneys Colin McCallan and Russell Hebbets.
Yes, welcome indeed, one and all, to another episode of Is This Legal? This is Colin McCallan. I'm joined, as always, with my partner, Russell Hebbets.
Hello, hello, everyone.
How's everybody doing? We're at the beginning of fall. It's not fall yet, but, you know, football season's around the corner. The kids are back in school. We kind of, you know, we're starting to see the witches and pumpkins and Home Depot.
College football starts on Saturday.
Yeah. So this is a fun time of year for us. Hope you all had a great summer and hopefully you're going to be easing into the autumn very nicely. So what do we got for you today? Well, we're going to be talking about a woman by the name of Tina Peters. That name might be familiar to you or if you're around the Colorado area, but it actually might be known to you if you're living in the United States, because she has made some national splashes. Russ, Tina Peters is a clerk and recorder in Mesa County, Colorado. This is an elected official. And she is facing numerous felony criminal charges related to activities that she and a couple of her deputies were engaged in after the 2020 election.
And it's worth noting that Mesa County, Colorado, the main city, the largest city in Mesa County is Grand Junction. This is a very Republican area of Colorado. Tina Peters is a staunch Republican.
Right. And, you know, we'll talk more about the office of the clerk and recorder later, but you know, she is an elected politician. She was elected, I believe, in 2018, and she came to prominence because she oversaw the election, like I said, for her county, and she became a very prominent election denier. No other way to say it. I mean, she started touring with Mike Lindell, the CEO of MyPillow. She started giving speeches indicating that she believed that the results in Colorado were incorrect, that the election was fraught with fraud. And but she actually did she took some affirmative steps that got her in trouble, both civilly and criminally. And so we thought we would talk about her. Again, we're not really going to get into politics in this podcast. We're really just going to be looking at what she's accused of doing. We're going to talk about where she is in the legal process. We're going to talk about a recent development where her deputy clerk just flipped on her, Russ.
Yeah, is going to flip, right?
Right.
Took a plea agreement, which we'll talk about later, but that plea agreement for her deputy clerk is requiring the clerk to testify against her. And where we're positioned right now is she is pending trial. She has pled not guilty,
right,
and she's pending criminal trial in Colorado.
That's right. So how about we revisit this kind of by way of a timeline and kind of let everybody know what happened, especially for those of you who are completely unfamiliar with this story. But again, Tina Peters, she's the clerk and recorder of Mesa County, and here's kind of the timeline that we have here. After the 2020 election, she did certify, she signed off on the election results, indicating that they were done properly and that there was no fraud, that everything was done okay. But then in January of 2021, you know, when, of course, January 6th is happening, the country is kind of watching all of these very bizarre events unfold after the election, she starts making public claims indicating that the election wasn't fair, that there were problems with the Dominion voting machines that were used in her county. And she kind of starts floating allegations that things weren't on the up and up. So here's what we know about kind of what happened and what action she took. So May 17th of 2021, Tina Peters' deputy clerk and co-defendant, her name is Belinda Nisley, asked the Mesa County's IT department to turn off the security cameras in the Mesa County Elections Office and to leave them off until August 1st. Okay. Coincidentally, about 6 days later, on a Sunday, Peters used her badge to secure a secure area.
To enter a secure area.
Exactly. with a person by the name of Conan Hayes, who is also a very prominent election denier.
Well, let's just tell him a little bit about Conan Hayes. He wasn't always an election denier. Do you know what he did before he came to prominence for his election denials?
I don't. I'd love to hear it.
He was a pro surfer.
Really?
So, I mean, it's the normal career path. Like,
for a Coloradan?
For a pro surfer in Colorado to then become an election, the spokesperson, like the poster child.
Yeah, you obviously can't surf in Colorado, so he had to find something else to do, I suppose. Now, why is this guy, you might be asking yourselves at home, why is this guy invited to come into the elections office and, I guess, take a look at a software update that's going on for a vote counting machine? Because that's exactly what happened. She brings this guy in during a software update that the Dominion voting machines were undergoing. And here's what she did. She created a badge for him, like an employee badge, so he could access secure areas of the building using someone else's identity, Russ.
Yeah, she actually created the badge. It was actually for a real person. There was this guy, his name, I don't have
Gerald Wood was his name.
There you go, Gerald Wood. So Gerald Wood, who's a resident of Fruta, Colorado, which is in Mesa County, he was contacted by the Tina Peters and her office to come in and basically do some sort of work on the Dominion machines. He went to the office and met with them, and he basically said, I'm unfamiliar with the machines.
I can't really help you here.
Right, but for that meeting, there was a badge created for him so he could go back and meet. He left the meeting, he gave the badge back to Tina Peters, and then Tina Peters turned around and presumably or allegedly gave the badge to Conan Hayes.
That's exactly right. Now, okay, so what's the big deal? A guy was allowed to come into a secure area. So far, I'm not hearing much of a crime other than maybe criminal impersonation and identity theft, I suppose. But where things
unauthorized access to a secured area.
Yeah, never mind. There's a few crimes going on. I spoke too soon. But what really happened here, of course, why we're talking about this is this guy, using these fake credentials, was able to make copies of the hard drive machines of the Dominion voting machines data. And the data was later published online on mostly very far right conservative websites, suggesting, of course, that the election was stolen and that it was fraudulent.
Right. And included in that download and exposure were secure passwords to those Dominion voting machines in Mesa County. In fact, the Republican board certified after this came out, they had to decommission these machines.
Right.
Because they weren't secure anymore.
Exactly. I mean, right after this breach, Dominion sent their own security team out to evaluate the machines and figure out what happened. And they were able to determine that the machines had, in fact, been tampered with.
Right.
And copies of data had, in fact, been obtained without any authorization. Meanwhile, the Colorado Secretary of State, whose name is Jenna Griswold, she's a Democrat. She was elected, I think, fairly recently, in 2018 as well, right? 18 or 16.
Right.
I know she's somewhat new on the job. So the Colorado Secretary of State, one of the things that the Colorado Secretary of State does is making sure that elections throughout the county are being done properly.
Throughout the state.
Pardon me, did I say county? I meant state. This is, in a way, it's not exactly Tina Peters' boss, but Tina Peters has to report her data to Jenna Griswold for certification.
Right. Jenna Griswold is a state elected official, whereas Tina Peters is just a county. So ultimately, the responsibility falls with Jenna Griswold. And so Jenna Griswold, August 30th of 2021, she filed a lawsuit against Tina Peters, and she alleged that Tina Peters committed these fraudulent activities, like allowing an unauthorized individual to participate in that update and compromising that equipment. She herself suspended Tina Peters from election duty,
right? She also decertified Mesa County's equipment, saying that this data breach had compromised their integrity. So she basically stripped Tina Peters of her duties as overseeing, as being able to oversee elections, as well as decertified these machines, and they had to be replaced.
Right. And that was a temporary, that was temporary. She had the power to do that as Secretary of State. But in October of that same year, a judge issued an injunction based on that lawsuit, actually stripping Peters of election-related duties.
Right.
But that wasn't it for Jenna Griswold, because Jenna does not like Tina Peters.
Right.
I mean, I think that's fair.
And I'm pretty sure the feeling is mutual, as we'll talk about in a minute.
In November of 2021, Jenna Griswold sued her again. And she sued her again, Colin, because Tina Peters was out there. She now had a little bit of a public profile.
Right.
Right.
Oh, yeah. She had been out there. She's been on media sites, interviewed, really anyone who would have her to talk about election fraud.
Exactly. So she's got this kind of national prominence now, and she was leveraging that to collect donations. And those donations, while purportedly for her legal defense fund for defending these lawsuits and potentially anything criminal that came up, she was using it in her campaign for re-election for clerk and recorder. Exactly. And she hadn't filed the paperwork with the state.
So what you're saying is you can't fundraise before you actually file your I'm running for this office paperwork, huh?
That turns out, Colin, that is a campaign finance law violation.
Okay.
So Jenna sues her again for that.
Wow. Okay. So this is like kind of October, November 2021. Now, meanwhile, in September of 2021, Belinda Nisley, the deputy clerk, remember her? She was the one who created the fake badge. She's the one who directed the cameras be turned off so that all of these parties could gain this illegal entry.
She's about neck deep in this.
She is neck deep in this. And we got a few things to say about her later. But what happens to her is she gets arrested in early September and charged with burglary because, remember, the Secretary of State banned her, as well as Tina Peters, from going to the county offices. Well, she was found. Belinda Nisley was found one day in the county offices, logged into a computer using Tina Peters' credentials. So she gets charged with burglary and some other crimes.
Yeah.
So that's September. That's 2 months before these lawsuits with Tina Peters and Jenna Griswold are going on.
So, I mean, burglary, we've talked about this on past podcasts, but how is that? She wasn't going in there to burgle something. She wasn't like using a crowbar and, you know, prying open a strong box,
right?
But the definition of burglary in Colorado is essentially going into a location you're not entitled to be in order to commit a crime.
That's exactly right. It basically, if you trespass unlawfully upon any property with intent to commit a crime therein, that's burglary. So she gets charged with that. So the walls are kind of starting to close in, and things start getting really real. We'll flash forward to March of 2022.
Before we go to March, I wanna just jump back to January, because I don't want to miss the third lawsuit that Jenna Griswold filed against Tina Peters. I mean, she's just hammering this woman with civil lawsuits. So this time, she files a lawsuit asking the courts to asking for an injunction saying Tina Peters should not be allowed to run for re-election of elections clerks because of statements she's made, because she said that the machines are not valid, and therefore there can be no trust in her as an elections clerk, and therefore she should not even be allowed to run.
Right. And I guess, I mean, we keep seeing more stuff here. Before March, before she gets, and she ends up getting indicted in February of 2022, she announces that she's going to run for Secretary of State to challenge right. Jenna Griswold.
She's like, I know how to stop this. She's already filed three lawsuits. I'm going to cut this off at the knees.
Right. So I think she announced her candidacy on Valentine's Day of 2022.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah. Meanwhile, a grand jury has been convened for several weeks And they are looking at all of this. You know, you remember grand juries. We actually don't deal with them a ton in Colorado, but we this would be the perfect grand jury case where a DA says, look, I don't want to charge anybody. I want to leave this up to the community.
Right.
So Daniel Rubenstein, who is the elected DA in Mesa County, he starts this grand jury investigation, and the grand jury does in fact issue an indictment on March 8th of 2022, charging Tina Peters and Belinda Knisley with 10 separate felony acts, a bunch of misdemeanors. In terms of the charges that Tina Peters is currently facing, we're talking about attempt to influence a public servant. This is where I think the allegations there are that she knowingly misled other public officials who were working in Mesa County about what they were doing with these machines during this update.
Right.
She's charged with identity theft as it relates to Gerald Wood, the stealing of his identity in order to gain this
to get access the surfer for
this
in.
Other guy, to get the surfer. Oh, that's great. She's charged with criminal impersonation related to those same charges. All of these are felony counts. And then there's a bunch of counts related to conspiracy, to violation of duty, official misconduct, things like that.
And she was indicted on 10. Knisley was indicted on 6 felonies.
That's exactly right. So Knisley is a co-defendant. So right now, Tina Peters is, as you mentioned earlier at the top of the podcast, she is awaiting trial on all of these felonies, okay? She's also dealing with all of these lawsuits from the Secretary of State. She's dealing with ethical complaints that were filed against her by the state of Colorado. I mean, she's probably got at least two or three teams of lawyers. Now, again, we don't know where her defense fund is coming from. She has been very public in trying to raise funds from her supporters. She does have supporters. She's conducted kind of miniature rallies outside the state capitol office.
Well, and it's worth saying, while all this is going on, she was allowed to run for Secretary of State. Jenna Griswold's third suit was unsuccessful there. She was allowed to run, and in the Republican primary, she lost.
She lost big time. I think she finished third.
That's right.
And you know, the first person who won the primary had most of the votes, and I think she was kind of a distant third. She, of course, true to form, denounced the results of that election, indicating that it was wrought with fraud. She demanded a recount. She ended up getting a recount.
Well, she raised money because it wasn't an automatic recount.
Right. She had to raise money for that.
Because she had to pay for it herself. So she raised money through this national profile that she had built. She got enough money. She got the recount, and the recount confirmed the results.
Yeah. And I think they even confirmed a wider margin of defeat than originally stated.
She lost a little ground.
Yeah. But definitely she didn't win. So that's her primary. And then one reason we're talking about this case, because this has been on our radar for a while as a possible podcast topic, but what really kind of pushed us over the edge in wanting to talk about this was, in the last 7 days, there's been a development. Belinda Knisley, the deputy clerk, has flipped, or she. What I mean by that is she has entered into an agreement with Daniel Rubenstein, the district attorney, where she's going to plead guilty to 3 misdemeanors. She's not going to go to jail. She's not going to face any felony charges if she agrees to truthfully testify against Tina Peters.
And that's the key part of that plea agreement right there, is that she is required to truthfully testify, which means if she gets up there and she says anything that can be shown to be a falsehood, then that plea agreement is out the window. They can reinstate the felony charges. They can ask for jail. They can ask for prison. And she is right back up Schitt's Creek without a paddle.
And real quick, remember, there's 2 cases. There's the burglary case for when she basically illegally gained entry when she wasn't supposed to be in the clerk and recorder's office. That's a separate case from then this other indictment where she's co-defendants with the Tina Peters that came down in March. So it absolutely behooves Belinda Knisley to cooperate with prosecutors because otherwise she faces significant jail time and felony convictions. Also, as a, as part of her plea, she has to never work as an elections official ever again.
Yeah. So let's, we forgot to mention this or we passed over it, but there's more just really, really entertaining stuff about Tina Peters.
Right.
And that is, so while this case is pending, while Knisley's case is pending, what Tina Peters allegedly did is she went to one of Knisley's court hearings. And for anyone who doesn't know, you're not allowed to record things in court.
Right.
Okay. That's a standing order from every judge. You can't go in there and record stuff. If you want to do that, you get permission from the judge.
That's right.
She goes in and allegedly has an iPad that she uses to record Knisley's court proceeding.
That's right. Okay? Her initial burglary one, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she got caught recording by the judge. And then another judge at a later proceeding saw Tina Peters and asked her if she had been recording the previous hearing. She denied it. She lied about it. And she later it later came out that she was lying about that.
And that is
it's contempt
itself,
of court.
Right. That is contempt of court, right? That when, you know, a courtroom is a judge's little fiefdom, you know, and basically don't mess with a judge in court.
Right.
Like you want to have words with the judge, do it outside of court, right? So
or you know what, if you're going to record a proceeding, keep that darn phone in your pocket and don't let people see you press the red button. Come on.
But so here's what happens. So she's at a local Grand Junction bagel shop getting her, you know, poppy seed with strawberry schmear.
Her everything with a side of Asiago.
Right. I mean, whatever her preference is, I don't know, but she's in
her triple decaf latte pumpkin spice right. Venti.
So she's in there and she gets approached by investigators from the DA's office and Grand Junction police trying to serve a search warrant for that iPad that she has.
That's right.
And rather than accept the warrant and give them her iPad, she passes her iPad. Her iPad starts getting passed around
to other people,
patrons in this bagel shop, and she refuses to cooperate.
And then she kicks one of the officers, and she gets arrested for obstruction of justice.
I mean,
this is on YouTube, you guys. So if you go to YouTube and you type in Tina Peters
bagel shop,
yeah, you're gonna see a video that's been viewed about 1.3 million times showing Tina Peters getting arrested and kind of making a scene. You know, she kind of goes limp when they're carrying away. You know, she's just repeatedly saying, let me go. Do you know who I am? Anyway, they eventually search the iPad. She gets charged with obstruction. So I don't know where we are in terms of lawsuits and criminal cases, but it's a lot at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, I don't know what's going on with the obstruction.
We got the three civil lawsuits. We got the grand jury indictment. We got the obstruction of justice charge. We got the contempt of court citation for recording in the courtroom, a myriad of ethics violations and complaints that she's dealing with. So, yeah, she's keeping her lawyers pretty busy right now.
And I'm going to say she has a couple parking tickets, too.
She probably lets her dog run off leash, right? Right, exactly.
Wait. We forgot. There's more, Colin.
Wow.
There's the bond violations.
That's right.
So
right, so she's on bond. So she had to post a $25,000 bond to remain out of custody. How's that been going for her, Russ?
Not so good. She's had multiple issues. She's had two different complaints to revoke her bond.
That's a big deal, folks.
That means that, like, if those are upheld and if they're followed through to their termination, that means she loses the $25,000 she posted. She is back in jail, and in order to get out, she has to repost a new bond, which a judge sets, and most of the time judges double it,
and they can file new charges against her for violating bond conditions.
Yes. So her first one was unauthorized travel.
Yep.
She went out of state, and this was, I mean, she had earlier permission to travel out of state, but then that permission went away and her lawyer screwed up and didn't ask for permission again. And right. The lawyer kind of fell on his sword. And so that one, like, kind of went away. Everyone said, okay, we understand, but, you know, don't do anything else. But she also has a separate one for violation of a protection order, because as part of these charges, there is a mandatory protection order that prevents her from contacting the clerk and recorder's office.
Right.
So when she lost that election we talked about and she wanted the recount, she sent an email to everyone in that office saying, I hereby formally request a recount. And that is a direct, blatant violation of this protection order that says don't contact anyone in the office.
Right. Yeah. So her track record has not been that good. So that's the lowdown on Tina Peters. We tried to make that concise. It ended up not feeling very concise. Right. There's really a lot here. But we're going to take a little break right now to play Is This Legal with our podcast guest. We have a guest this week named Christopher Faulkner, and he's going to join us to play Is This Legal? We are going to talk more about Tina Peters. We'll talk about some legal defenses that she might be able to avail herself to. We'll talk about the import of Belinda Nisely flipping on her. We'll kind of just unpack this a little bit more.
And we're going to have a DCOTW for you.
I mean, if like you're out of excuses to not don't, leave us right
don't
now.
Pause. Don't pause. Yeah. Whatever you do.
All right. We'll see you on the other side of Is This Legal?
Our guest today is Christopher Faulkner. Talk about a jack of all trades. Based in Denver, he's a husband. He's a father. He's an entrepreneur. He's a coach for his kids. He's a Jeep enthusiast. He's a fitness junkie. He's a former model. And by the way, he likes to build houses on the side. His company, Gray Design Build, just completed a house renovation for my family. He was a joy to work with. It turned out awesome. And as a bonus, he's a fan of our show. And today we're going to check out his legal skills. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are we doing today?
We're doing never great. Better, my friend. We're doing awesome, man. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm excited to be on the show. I have become quite the fan.
Yeah, we appreciate you. I mean, Christopher actually reached out to us one time and said, hey, I'd love to be on the show. And so, look, we make these dreams a reality. Here he is at long last. He's going to be a guest to play Is This Legal? But before we get to there, Chris, tell us, man, you once told me a pretty interesting story. You were once on a jury in Denver, I think, once.
I was on a homicide trial, emotionally very, very sad. And despite the best efforts of the defense attorneys, it was quite obvious that he was guilty. I do remember I was sitting in the room waiting for the judge to come in after we had rendered the verdict and before they let us go. And she said, does anyone have any questions? And I said, just real quick, why is this a retrial? What are we doing here? Which I didn't realize would raise some hackles at the time, because then she wondered if I was researching the case and looking at everything. And I just said, well, no, the first day we walked in, the court case was 08CR... And it's 2015 when I'm in the room, and it just didn't seem like the guy was smart enough to be on the lam. Yeah. So I was able to dig in a little bit. Every time you get an evidence bag, it had been opened in September of 2008 and everything.
Uh-huh. So I realized it was at you. I mean, this is like a sleuth on the jury. See, this is why, as defense attorneys, like, you never know what they're doing back in that room. You never know, like, how clever those jurors are. So, I mean, you're just proving my point that, like, you can't second guess a jury.
It's an interesting room to be in. I'm sure you haven't had the right or the privilege to be there because of your vocation, but it's interesting when you're balancing all of that and people's lives and facts and evidence, and you have to render a verdict.
Right.
Well, it sounds like, though, I've talked to you about this before. It sounds like you're at peace with the verdict. It sounds like the evidence was there. And, it sounds like a really emotional case, but it sounds like you had to do what you had to do.
Yeah. I guess when you get caught with the gun in your backpack less than 150 yards from the homicide, you're probably going to be found.
Ugh. Yeah,
that's
what we would call a bad. That's what we call a bad fact. That's right, Russ?
It's a tough starting point right there for the defense. Yeah.
Chris, would you ever want to be on a jury again?
Absolutely. It's a part of it. People say it's your civic duty, but I think if you want to render an opinion in life, you have to donate your time and render a verdict at some other point in time.
Well, all and right. I'll tell you, our justice system wouldn't work without jurors who were willing to go put in the time and actually sit there and thoughtfully look at the evidence and decide the case. So thank you for your service.
Yeah. Well,
Well, it was a lot of fun, but let's see how I do with our friends today and see if I can figure out what their legal snafu is.
We've cooked something up for you here. We're gonna see what kind of verdict you're going to render against Jebediah, I think, here in a moment, right?
So, all right.
Russ, take it away.
So, and I'll tell everyone out there, because this is kind of a tricky one. We cooked up a tougher one for Christopher here. So if at home, if Christopher gets it and you guys don't feel too bad, because what you don't know is that Christopher actually scored a 165 on the LSAT, which is the admissions test for law school, which for anyone out there, that's a really good score. So
yeah, that's like Ivy League stuff. Where do I want to go to law school kind of stuff. Right, I'll just throw the star at the map and I'll probably get in.
You get to pick and choose. So although he didn't pursue that path, he's got the brain for it. So Christopher, let's see if you have the brain for today's episode of Is This Legal? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Great setup. All I can do is fail.
Here we go. Jebediah's wagon wheel repair shop wasn't doing so well. With the new advent of the motor car, less folks were interested in getting their wagons fixed. Jebediah needed materials, but he couldn't pay for them. He decided to steal some steel. So he snuck over to the train station and stole some new rail that he could melt and forge for his wagon wheel materials. The theft was reported the next day, and Officer Cornelius knew right where to look, Jebediah's shop. No steel was recovered there. Jebediah is far too smart for that. However, Officer Cornelius did some digging into Jebediah's past for clues. He contacted the Justice of the Peace for two counties over and found out that 5 years earlier, Jebediah was convicted of stealing steel from that town's railroad and using it for his wagon wheel business when he lived there. Cornelius arrests Jebediah for the new theft and provides the judge a copy of the police report from the old theft. Here is your question. Can Jebediah's previous arrest and conviction for the old theft be used to prove the new theft? In other words, because there's evidence that he did it once, he'd do it again.
So, first of all, I'm going to go out on a very solid limb and say no, that previous conviction cannot be used as evidence of a current crime. But I will also go back and say I didn't hear anything about having a warrant when he searched his property. So he's already tainting this whole case. You talk about he went to the rail yard, found out there was a theft, assumed and searched. And I didn't hear even probable cause or beyond that reasonable suspicion, I think is what you tell us, to get the warrant to go and look search the property. So I think at this point, this case is going to hell in a handbasket.
I'll tell you what, we never said that Officer Cornelius was a good above board police officer. Right. In fact, the opposite is not the case.
Right. If you asked us, we'd probably say the opposite.
And the good news, though, with your answer is we have a winner. That is correct. You cannot use the conviction for the old theft in the new theft. And Chris, you're absolutely right. The reason is because your prior criminal history that is not allowed to be used on its face to prove, well, if you did it once, you must have done it again. The new case has to be judged independently. However, we're not done with you, Chris. We've got a follow-up. So let's see what you think about this if we twist it a little bit. So question two, what if Cornelius says, whoa, Judge, I'm not trying to use that previous theft to show that Jebediah is a repeat offender. I want to introduce this in his trial to show the similarities in which the crimes were committed. You see, in both cases, the railroad spikes were bent backward in the exact same way to free the steel so it could be stolen. I want to use the previous theft to show how the crime was committed, not that Jebediah did it once and so therefore he did it again. What do you think a judge should do with that argument?
I believe we end up in the same position unless he's using it to impeach a statement where he said, I've never done such thing, or I have no idea how you would steal railroad tracks. And then by making a statement like that, I believe you would be able to impeach him for previous statements with the previous crime. But I think on its face, I don't think you're allowed to just bring that in.
So, judges, he's close, Russ. What do you think? I think that's a partial correct answer there.
I'll give him partial credit, Christopher. What you said at the end is correct. Okay, so if he did say something like, I have no idea how I would never steal railroad line, or I have no idea how I could accomplish that, you're exactly right. That would be impeaching him with a prior inconsistent statement. So you could bring it in for that purpose. But there is something in both state and federal law. It's called 404B evidence, and that's the rule of evidence it falls under. You can bring in past instances of misconduct to show things like modus operandi. So to show that this crime was done in a similar way, therefore we think that he's the one who did it because it was done the exact same way, that gets to come in, because it's not to show because he did it before he can do it again. It's to show this is evidence that he did it because of how it was done. He did it before like that. So it's evidence.
Do you remember the wet bandits from Home Alone? It's kind of like that. Remember when the cop is arresting him and says, hey, nice job leaving the water on. Now we know each and every house that you hit. Kind of, you know, that's kind of what we're going after there. We're going to give it to you. I think that's a correct answer. That's what I say, Russ. I'm feeling generous today. I think that's 2-for-2.
I'm good for that.
I feel like I could have done better, but it then teaches you don't do the same thing over and over again, and don't wear a mask. You better become the mask bandit. They'll catch you quicker than if you're original every time.
That's absolutely exactly right.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
And I'll tell you, Chris, this is a tangly issue that even very seasoned defense attorneys and prosecutors struggle with, to see what comes in and what doesn't. So this was a tough one. I mean, we gave you a difficult one here, and you handled it well.
Well, thank you very much. Now, would that have been argued in pretrial motions?
And honestly, this is another one where it's fairly subjective. I mean, I've had judges rule against me or for me, with no rhyme or reason for this stuff, both as a defense attorney or a prosecutor. So you never know. It's tricky stuff.
But it would be.
But that's why we saved it for you.
Pre-trial. You're absolutely right.
All right. Well, hey, you guys keep up the good work. I can't wait to hear the full content of this pod.
You will. Hey, is there anything you want to plug? Anything else that's near and dear to your heart you want that our listeners to know about?
Hey, you know what? You nailed a lot of what I do. I'm a lucky man. I get to build great homes with a wonderful partner and a great team of employees. But the number one thing I like to plug is support your youth sports. When you see somebody out there working as a coach or as an umpire or a referee, you know, let them know you appreciate them. That's those guys get hammered all day long about bad calls or this and that. And if you've ever sat with an umpire or referee, all they're trying to do is the right thing for some kids.
That's a great point. Well said.
Awesome.
All right. Well, Chris, thanks so much for joining us, man. Thank you for being a guest on our show, and we will see you down the road, my friend.
It's a pleasure, right, Chris.
Hey, thanks, Russell. Have a great day. Bye, Colin.
Take care, guys. Right. Bye-bye.
And we're back. So I know while you guys were listening to Is This Legal, I mean, your mind was only half on it because you were thinking to yourself, the burning question in your minds, I know, was, these guys were talking a lot about a clerk and recorder. What in the heck is a clerk and recorder, and what do they do? Colin, enlighten us.
So, the county clerk and recorder serves the public through offices situated in various locations throughout the municipality or location where he or she records documents, files maps, issues marriage licenses, registers votes, handles elections, and prepares and issues motor vehicle titles and plates. As the chief election official for the county, the county clerk and recorder shall be the chief designated election official for that particular location.
So I guess the moral of the story here is Tina Peters should have spent more time filing maps and less time getting herself into hot water with law enforcement. Am I right or am I right?
Are we at a point, though, where kind of like maps are done? Like, I mean, really, like, does Rand McNally really put out a new map? I think this isn't like Columbus. We're not discovering any new worlds here, right? I mean, right.
I feel like cartography is no longer a major in most universities.
Right. I don't know. Well, yeah, again, like you said, maybe Tina Peters should have made that more of a priority. Probably wasn't one of her election promises to run that platform. But anyway, so let's kind of talk about possible defenses. We are criminal defense attorneys, after all. I mean, if Tina Peters had come to us and said, hey, I need your help. Russ, what do you think, what are we going to do to attack this case? I mean, what are some of the things we're going to float out there?
Yeah, I mean, kind of the underlying basis of all of this from a defense perspective is she was a righteous actor.
Absolutely.
Right. She truly,
she's a martyr.
I think she truly believes that the election was not secure. I think she believes, even though there's not a lot of evidence to support it, but there's some out there, you know, there's experts who are willing to go out there and say, yes, I think that these were unsecured. And that is the underlying basis of any defense she's going to mount.
Right. It comes down to public perception, right? I mean, there are a lot of people out there who are 100% supporters of Tina Peters, who think that she is doing the Lord's work, who believe that she is a whistleblower who is being persecuted, by the crazy left. You know, I mean, that's kind of the narrative that's out there that comes from her own lips when she talks about this stuff. I mean, this is a big conspiracy to keep the truth out is essentially what she says about her efforts.
And here's the problem with that. The problem with that defense is these statutes are very clear. She's not charged with being right wing. She's not charged with being an election denier. The truth of that is not a defense to what she's charged with. She's charged with things like criminal impersonation.
Right.
Right.
The creation of a badge that for someone who isn't credentialed by use of another person's identity.
So for the criminal side, you're going to take that a court is going to take that in a bubble. You know, they're going to say, does her conduct meet these elements of the crime? And it does. So from the public perception, like the defense then becomes jury nullification.
Right.
Right.
I think it serves her to be kind of out there talking about herself as a victim, talking about herself as a martyr, because what she's really doing, that's a calculated effort to garner sympathy, to let people know, hey, that like I'm the victim of a witch hunt kind of thing.
Well, let's define jury nullification for the people out there listening, because that's a term of art in the law.
Right.
Jury nullification essentially means that even though someone is technically guilty of a crime, so all of the elements are met, they did do it, but the jury nullifies that verdict because they just don't want to find that person guilty.
Right, exactly. And to be clear, jury nullification is technically illegal. Jurors are instructed. They're not to make decisions based on their emotions, based on how they feel. They're supposed to look at the facts and decide whether or not they apply to a statute or not. It's supposed to be black and white. But, you know, of course, we know that jurors actually do sometimes make decisions based on emotion. Are 12 people going to convict Tina Peters of anything? I don't know, especially in a conservative jurisdiction, as you mentioned.
Right. It's definitely a conservative jurisdiction. I think it's a tough one to get around because just the evidence that she committed these technical crimes is so great. But here's another one I'll float to you. So try this on for size,
okay,
Colin.
I'm ready.
How about a choice of evils defense?
Hmm.
So we talked about this in one of our Jebediah Cornelius hypotheticals several podcasts ago. So anyone who's a loyal listener will remember this. But that's essentially where you commit one crime in order to prevent a greater crime from occurring.
So, okay. I mean, I'm following you so far. Are you saying that she had to do these things in order to prevent the larger crime of keeping the truth
of massive election fraud? Right.
But so, but it's not she. But she didn't commit massive election fraud. So, what was her choice of evils?
So her choice of evils was either committing these crimes to create the false badge, go in and document this wrongdoing, or do nothing. And the other side of that is the harm would just occur. She had to act in order to prevent that harm from occurring.
Oh, I see what you're saying. She had to act in order to prevent fraud.
Yes.
I see what you're saying. I got you. Right. All right. So that's a possible defense. I
mean, it's a stretch though.
Yeah, I agree. It's a legal podcast. We have to talk about these things. I'll tell you what I'm expecting though. I'm absolutely expecting an attack from her defense team on Belinda Nisley. Okay. Belinda Nisley is now a huge problem
right.
for Tina Peters right. because this is her deputy clerk, her employee, who I'm sure is going to say, well, Tina directed me right. to, you know, turn the cameras
to
off. Tina directed me to create the badge. Tina directed, I did all of this at my boss's direction. And when her title is deputy clerk, that's something. Okay.
That's believable.
That is believable. And so what Tina now has to do is she has to discredit Belinda Nisley. The way she's going to do that is she's going to say, well, look, Belinda Nisley is going to say anything. She's going to say anything she can in order to stay out of jail, in order to save her own ass from felonies. She can't be believed. She's not credible. Tina Peters did nothing wrong. And now they're using her own deputy clerk as a weapon against her in this political witch hunt.
And make no mistake, all of that comes in. Her plea agreement, yeah. any promises that were made, that is fair game at a trial because it goes directly to Nisley's credibility.
And I'll tell you, it's a sweetheart deal, man. I mean, even the judge who took her plea commented on that. He wanted to send her to jail.
Right.
This was a no jail stipulation, which meant if she took this deal, it was a guarantee that she wasn't going to jail. And the judge raised an eyebrow about that. I mean, he actually said, I really have a problem with this conduct. These are serious felonies that were committed. And essentially, this woman is going to walk. But, you know, based on the urging of the district attorney, Dan Rubenstein, he said, look, she's an essential witness against Tina Peters. We need her cooperation. We need her testimony. And so that's why we're making this deal.
Yeah. So if I'm making a guess as to what's going to happen, a prediction, if you will, I am going to predict Tina Peters is going to go down. I think she's going to be convicted of at least some felonies, maybe not all of them. And she is probably going to do some time, and then she's going to go on to a very lucrative, successful career on a far right wing media.
On Lindell TV. He has his own TV station.
He does.
I just found that out. That's right. I'm not as confident as you are in a conviction, only from the standpoint that, like it or not, this thing is seeping with politics.
Right.
You know,
it's dripping with it.
Dripping.
Politics just, is seeping just into it, and then it's dripping
everywhere.
Everywhere.
Like it's getting big, on the rug. It's staining the carpet. Yeah.
Politic blob.
But it's true. I mean, you know, I think Dan Rubenstein is going to want to kind of divorce politics from this completely. He's going to want to say, look, this is pure and simple. This is about a woman who broke the law. This is about an elected official who abused her power, who, you know, kind of directed her own employees to commit crime. This has nothing to do with politics.
And the defense is going to do the exact opposite. Yeah. The defense is going to say, this is all about politics.
Yeah.
This is about nothing but politics. This election was replete with problems. And she was the shining knight in white armor trying to save the republic and give it back to the people. And she is being persecuted for political reasons.
That's
and
right.
You cannot convict a woman like that.
That's right. I mean, she should have hired you.
Well, I mean, of course.
Russ was unavailable. So anyway, that is kind of our take on this case. This is fascinating to us. We were very intrigued when her deputy clerk flipped on her because up until that point, it sounded like Ms. Nisley was going to fight the charges all the way. She was just as defiant as Tina Peters was. But I guess when you got a sweetheart deal and all those felonies go away and you find out you're not going to jail, things change.
And you look at a prison, right?
Right.
And if anyone's interested, we did do a podcast on flipping a while ago.
It's one it was
of
on,
our
like Paul Manafort.
It
remember,
was.
Remember that name?
Yeah. So
it seemed like so long ago.
It does. So if you're interested in flipping, we did a whole podcast on that. But now, Colin, I think
Russ.
It is time for
D-C-O-T-W!
Yeah, baby.
Dumb Criminal of the Week.
Yeah.
So, today, it's my turn, Colin.
And I can't wait.
I mean...
For those of you at home, we kind of take turns and we pick these, so I have not heard this scenario.
And it's
I'm right with you, listener. I have no idea what's coming here. Could be a fastball, could be a curveball, could be a slider. I don't know.
It's changeup. You never know. You never know.
And I think he's telling me it's a changeup, but he's going to change it up and throw me a fastball.
I might do that. All right. So this one comes to us from the great state of Maine.
Whoa!
I don't think we've ever had one from Maine before.
No, I can just about guarantee it.
Yep. So it's a guy named Zachary.
People break the law up there?
I mean, apparently. I mean, this is a funny one. A guy named Zachary Locke. I can only assume he just came from a lighthouse. But what he did is he went into a Maine donut shop. So he went in to apply for a job. Okay. So he goes in.
Nothing wrong with that.
He wants to make some donuts, get up early in the morning. So he fills out the application. He then is at the counter and he's chatting with the guy behind the counter who is not the owner, who's just an employee. And the guy behind the counter he's doing stuff, you know, he's the only employee there and he's doing donut stuff, whatever it is. And as Zachary is at the counter, he notices sitting on the counter is a big jar of money.
Mm.
And it is a jar that is soliciting donations for Christmas gifts for needy kids.
Oh, no.
He, not having a job...
being
a needy youngster, cannot resist it. So he very awkwardly tucks it under his jacket as the employee is back behind the counter. And he just kind of quickly walks out of the donut shop with the jar of money under his coat. Mm. Now, there was surveillance in the shop. There's different angles. It's very clear what happened. Colin, it was all on camera, but I'm going to let you guess where I'm going with this. How do you think he got caught?
I'm assuming he got caught because the employee saw him with the large jar under his coat.
The employee did not see him. He got caught. They figured it out soon after that the jar was gone, mm-hmm. and they pieced it together that he took it. But they didn't have any trouble tracking him down because he had just applied for a job there with his name, his phone number, his address, his social security number. So it wasn't really, didn't take too much sleuthing for the Maine police to really go pick up Zachary very quickly on this one.
Well, I just got one question. He got the job, right? I mean, if he filled out the application, right, I'm assuming everything went well. He's employed there right now.
Maybe he was just showing initiative and he was going to go buy the gifts for the kids himself.
See, again, he should have hired you.
There's always an angle, people. There's always an angle.
I assume he didn't mount that defense, though.
No, he did not. I didn't see what he got sentenced to, but he was charged with theft.
How much money was in there? Like,
I mean, not
five
a lot,
bucks,
right? I mean, it was not a lot.
I mean, I'm picturing like a tip jar.
That's what it looked like, yeah. Oh, and I'm going to say it wasn't worth it. So how many knuckleheads for Zach Locke from Maine?
Four. I kind of want to give him five, though, just for being a jerk. Like, I mean, you know, stealing from kids on Christmas while you're applying for a job. It's really stupid. That's for sure.
I'm going the full five.
Yeah.
I see no redemption for him. Like, he just left his name, his actual name, address, phone number, social, and then he took it from a place that was fully surveilled. Like, sorry.
Not to mention the karma ramifications there.
Right.
He's got a bunch of bad metaphysical stuff waiting to happen to him.
He's in bad shape from several different levels.
I'm going to go up to five. I don't want to change.
I convinced you.
Yeah, you did.
Ten, Zach. Yeah. You got the full ten,
yep,
Zach.
One of the few.
Put that on your resume next time.
We do have DCTOW plaques, but they just never get sent out.
Right. No one ever solicits for them.
Did I say DC?
DCOTW, right.
Whatever it is. Yeah. You all know.
You know.
All right. Well, that's pretty stupid stuff there, Russ. Thanks for wrapping us up there. I'll wrap up the podcast. That's what we have to say about Tina Peters. As always, this is, of course, ongoing. And with this saga, we'll probably have an update next week over some tomfoolery or
ridiculousness. Yeah.
But yeah, in the meantime, though, thank you so much for listening. Would you like to be a guest on our podcast? You know what to do. Email us at denvercrimelaw@gmail.com, all one word. You can find us, tweet at us at Is This Legal Pod on Twitter. You can find us at our Facebook page, Hebbets and McAllen. In the meantime, Russ, you got anything else, sir?
Nope, that is it. Be safe, everyone.
Happy autumn, everyone. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Is This Legal? See you next time.